Hi, everyone. Thanks very much for letting me be here with you today. First, I want to say if anyone needs a paper copy of the public health law sessions, I have plenty, so please come see me afterwards. I'm happy to hand those out. But now for something a little different, using gubernatorial executive orders to advance public health. And I want to acknowledge and thank Lainey Rutko and Jan Vernick, who worked on this research with me. Nothing to disclose in terms of conflicts. But I want to talk about executive orders and public health, which is something that I think sometimes doesn't get as much attention as legislation and regulation, or regulation, strictly speaking. And we have this separation of powers idea that's, you know, civics 101 and pretty basic, right? The legislature sets policy and funds public health as well as other sectors. The executive enforces laws, regulates various aspects, and then the judiciary interprets and resolves conflicts. But what I want to sort of talk to you all about is something that's, you know, a little bit different, certainly regulation in many ways, but in a slightly different form. So executive orders are authorized both at the federal level and at the state level. At the federal level, it's based on Article 2 of the Constitution and the discussion of executive power. The state level, the definition of what an executive order is a little bit different from state to state, and the authority comes from constitutions, from statutes, and from case law. And I think that executive orders can sometimes blur the lines that we have from the Civics 101 understanding of the three branches and the checks and balances, and they do that in several ways. They can suspend existing laws and regulations. They can sometimes look like policies and actually set policies. They can affect individual rights by, you know, for instance, in a declared emergency, by taking away certain protections for individuals that normally exist in a regular sort of environment where there is no emergency. So I want to sort of talk to you a little bit about first executive order authority, and then present some examples of how that's been used by various governors to advance public health. So as I mentioned, the authority comes from several different sources. 26 out of 50 states have explicit authority in their constitutions for executive authorities, and 18 have implicit authority. 37 have authority in their statutes, and 7 states have case law that authorizes executive orders at the state level. And many states have more than one source of authority, so there's substantial overlap between these. So in one study revealed that in a period of 2 years, from 2004 to 2005, there were over 3,400 executive orders, and 57% are sort of what I think of as more substantive executive orders. So they're not dealing with things like state holidays or flying the flag at half-mast, but actually more substantive policy-oriented activities and structures. So some examples of what executive orders have done for public health. One example comes from Louisiana. After the offshore drilling unit leased by BP exploded in the largest offshore oil spill in U.S. history, the Deepwater Horizon oil spill. And in April 2010, Governor Jindal in Louisiana proclaimed an emergency and then extended it in May. And in June of 2010, he issued an executive order which authorized out-of-state emergency medical technicians to practice in Louisiana if they were licensed in another state and in good standing in another state. And this was grounded in a legislative provision that authorized him to suspend state statutes or regulations in order to address an emergency. Executive orders can also create new programs and entities, and here are a couple examples. One is out of New Jersey in 2005, and the other is out of Pennsylvania in 2007. So in 2005, New Jersey used an executive order to create an anabolic steroid abuse program that essentially required random testing of athletes, as well as education in schools about anabolic steroid abuse and random testing of dietary supplements. And in 2007 in Pennsylvania, the governor there created a chronic care management reimbursement and Cost Reduction Commission that was looking at information systems and evaluating disease management programs in Pennsylvania, focusing on chronic disease. So one interesting thing about the Pennsylvania example is that this commission was scheduled to expire, and there was significant interest in the legislature in sort of keeping it alive. And the House voted unanimously to save the commission through legislation, even though it ended up not passing through through the Senate and at the state legislature. Executive orders can also allow governors to direct agencies to take a particular action. So in this example, which comes out of New York in 2010, Governor Patterson basically required the Department of Environmental Conservation in the state to revise its environmental impact statement and identify conditions to incorporate into permits to protect public health and the environment. And so this allowed the governor to actually have a lot more control over hydrofracking in the state, which, as I think folks are familiar with, has some potential health consequences. And one thing that's interesting about this example is that he issued this executive order after vetoing legislation that would have imposed a moratorium on fracking in the state, and he sort of through doing that was able to maintain control over this policy issue. Executive orders can also help reorganize agencies. In Illinois in 2010, the Diabetes Prevention and Control Program moved from the Department of Human Services to the Department of Public Health through an executive order, and the governor there cited both constitutional and statutory authority to reorganize the executive branch that was responsible to him. And I think one thing that's really important about this example is while governors can certainly transfer programs like this to the Department of Public Health or a department that they think has substantial expertise in the area, they could also potentially transfer it to another department that may not have as much expertise in an area like this. Executive orders can also raise the profile of an issue, and this example is out of Virginia in 2007, where Governor Kaine created a Governor's Commission on Climate Change. And through this, he was able to set priorities and sort of elevate the salience of climate change issues in the state. And one of the things that the commission had to do was create a state climate change plan that would inventory the effects of greenhouse gas emissions on the state, including effects on health, would evaluate some of the consequences of emissions, and also identify potential policy solutions. And this climate change plan was then also led to a report in 2008 that demonstrated that there were adverse health effects to Virginians, especially vulnerable populations, related to greenhouse gas emissions. And the work of the commission was then cited by state legislation when they when folks in the state of Virginia at the state level instituted legislation that had certain climate change impacts, including requiring utilities to get more of their energy from renewable sources. Executive orders can also control state operations. Just a couple examples here. Two from New York and Colorado both deal with the same issue, where the governor there prohibited any state agency or folks that were working for state agencies to purchase bottled water as a way to try to, among other things, reduce some of the environmental consequences of bottled water use in those states. And in again, Governor Kaine in Virginia in 2006, before Virginia passed legislation in 2009 that prohibited smoking in all state and local government buildings, issued an executive order which, with a few exceptions, basically prohibited smoking in state government-owned and operated buildings, vehicles, universities, which had substantial effects on both state employees and visitors and students. So I think there are some advantages and disadvantages to think about when trying to assess whether an executive order is a more useful tool than legislation or regulation. And I think, you know, some of those are probably, you know, slightly self-evident and certainly vary by state, but I think executive orders are especially useful when trying to rapidly respond to a problem because they allow the governor to take action quickly rather than having to go, for instance, through the legislative process or an administrative procedure process that may be a lot more cumbersome. There's also a lot of flexibility and adaptability with executive orders. They can be issued quickly, they can be repealed quickly, which, you know, sort of maybe one of the disadvantages. They're fast to formulate and to implement, and also may be useful in trying out new programs quickly and trying to see their effectiveness. They can also end gridlock or inaction, whether it's at the legislative level or within an agency, by sort of having, you know, one decision maker make a decision that, you know, we're obviously hoping is going to be helpful for public health. And they can serve as foundation for legislation as well, whether through testing innovative programs or as a way to sort of experiment with something. But there are also certainly disadvantages. For one thing, executive orders are limited in scope and are very much different in every state in terms of the topics that they can address. So an executive order issued by a governor has to be within that scope for that particular state. They're often also issued for a limited duration. Either they expire on their own at a certain date or when a governor is no longer in office, or they can be superseded by a subsequent executive order that essentially makes them null. And they can also be overridden by legislation, which is another thing to consider. And depending on the state laws and also the authority for the executive order, they may lack enforceability or specific standards. That's all I have, and thanks very much. Thank you.